There was one other thing that I think is very interesting that it's good to share. And that is, although that we've been talking of the Four Noble Truths in terms of the path of the intermediate level person, okay, because that's where the Four Noble Truths, as it was taught, you know, in the first discourse by the Buddha, that's where it falls. It's talking about how to gain liberation from cyclic existence. Another way of looking at the Four Noble Truths is that you can see them in terms of each of the three levels of practitioner. Okay, so although the Four Noble Truths technically falls within the practice of the intermediate level, in common with the intermediate level person, it can also be explained in terms of the initial level practitioner, the intermediate, and the advanced or high level practitioner. Okay? So here we're going to understand the Four Noble Truths in a slightly different way, but I think it's quite interesting, and it helps us see like this consistent way that the Buddha taught. So if you're talking about an initial level practitioner, okay, somebody whose motivation is a good rebirth, okay, then what is true suffering in the context of that practitioner? Okay, true suffering for that practitioner is having a meaningless, directionless life, okay, and having worse rebirths. Okay, now, for that level practitioner, what are the causes of a meaningless, directionless life and worse rebirths? Well, the causes are, first of all, not having refuge. Okay, because when you don't have refuge, then you have a meaningless life, directionless life, you're confused. And the true cause of your worst rebirths are the 10 destructive actions. Okay, lack of basic ethics. And in the context of that initial level practitioner, what are the cessations? What is it that they want to stop? Well, they want to stop, they want to stop having a directionless life by having a meaningful life, okay? And they want to stop having bad rebirths by having good rebirths. That's the true cessation or what they're aiming for, okay? And then the path to get to that is, first of all, by taking refuge, okay? And second of all, by following ethics, abandoning the 10 negative actions. So I think that's real interesting in the context of just the initial level practitioner. You have suffering, its cause, the cessation or what they're aimed at, and the path to actualize that. So there's this real consistency of those four things for the initial level practitioner. Okay. Now, for the intermediate level practitioner, then true suffering is any kind of rebirth in samsara. Yeah, that's what we've been talking about, any kind of rebirth within the six realms. That's okay, and the cause of that is disturbing attitudes and karma. Yeah, so it's this uncontrolled rebirth in the six realms, caused by disturbing attitudes and karma. The cessation of that is nirvana, okay, stopping those rebirths, stopping their causes. And the path to that is the Eightfold Noble Path. And the, you know, specifically here, the determination to be free, that makes you practice the Eightfold Noble Path, that makes you practice the three higher trainings. Okay? Yeah? So you see how, again, there's this consistency of suffering or undesirability. Remember, whenever I say suffering, it means undesirability. It's just easier to say. Yeah? So you have undesirable or unsatisfactory experiences, causes, cessation, and a path to that. Yeah? Now, for the high-level practitioner whose motivation is, okay, not just enlightenment. That's not their motivation. It's to benefit others by becoming enlightened. Okay? So in that context, of that higher person's practice, what is true suffering for them? It's everybody's problems, everybody's unsatisfactory conditions. Okay? So it's not, no longer just my unsatisfactory conditions, my samsara, my cyclic existence, but it's everybody's cyclic existence. Okay? And the true suffering is also one's own limitation of lacking omniscience. Okay? Not yet being a Buddha, so not having the perfect wisdom and compassion and skill to be able to benefit others, because one lacks the omniscient mind. Okay, so that's considered the undesirable experience, those two things. Everybody's cyclic existence and our own limitations of not being omniscient. The cause for that is our own selfishness. Okay, the true causes, the self-centered attitude. Okay, because the self-centered attitude is what keeps us from working for the benefit of others. Okay, and it keeps us from becoming enlightened. Because you don't get enlightened. The only reason to become enlightened is to be able to benefit others. So the self-centered attitude is a cause, a limiting cause. Okay? And in addition, the obscurations to omniscience on our mind stream, which are the subtle stains left behind by the disturbing attitudes. So we have to remove not just the disturbing attitudes, but also the subtle stains, what they call the appearance of inherent existence, or the subtle dualistic appearance. Okay? So that is a cause of the lack of omniscience. Okay? Then the cessation that we're aiming for here is full enlightenment, which is ceasing, you know, all the selfish mind, all the limitations, all the defilements on the mind stream, and developing all the good qualities to their full extent. So that's the enlightenment. That's the true cessation. That's the aim that we're going for. And then the path to practice this is the bodhicitta motivation and the six far-reaching attitudes of the bodhisattva and the tantric practice. So that becomes the true path that we practice in order to gain the cessation, which eliminates the true suffering and the true causes. Okay. So you see how this pattern of those four things keeps going through from the initial level practitioner to the medium level practitioner to the advanced level practitioner, you know, of what is the undesirable experiences. What are the causes of them? What is the cessation? What is the path? Yeah. So I personally think that's incredibly interesting. It gives you a lot to think about, another way of rearranging the material. Because I think a lot in learning the Dharma material is not just kind of getting it, but it's being able to look at the same thing from a whole lot of different viewpoints. Because as you do that, you gain new perspectives on it. So I find this way of thinking about the Four Noble Truths gives you actually a whole overview to the entire Lamrim. So we just had the whole Lamrim. Okay? So don't complain that you don't learn anything. Yeah? What are the subtle stains to omniscience? Okay. Well, we have two levels of obscurations. Okay? We have diluted obscurations and we have the obscurations to omniscience. The diluted obscurations are what we're trying to eliminate in the Four Noble Truths according to the middle level practitioner. Okay? The diluted obscurations are the ignorance that grasps at true or inherent existence and all the disturbing attitudes and all the contaminated karma. Now, you can eliminate all that stuff. The ignorance, disturbing attitudes, contaminated karma, you can become an arhat. Okay, you no longer get reborn in cyclic existence, but you still have this subtle stain on your mind. So the mirror is still a little bit dirty. Now, what's dirty about it? Yeah? I mean, you say, well, you've realized emptiness. How can you still have a dirty mirror? Okay? It's like they say when you cook onions in the pot, in a pot, you can take the onions out, but the smell of the onions is still there. Okay? So it's like that. You can remove the ignorance and disturbing attitudes, but there's still a stain left in the mind stream from them. And that stain is the appearance of true existence, the appearance of inherent existence. So the ignorance and the disturbing attitudes, what they're about is grasping at true or inherent existence. So that's our mind grasping on, conceiving of things in a certain way. But aside from that, you have, because of the stains and taints on our mind, you have phenomena appearing to be true and inherently existent. Okay? So you have the appearance, and then you have our grasping on top of it. Well, the grasping is easier to eliminate than the appearance. Okay? So the grasping is eliminated by realizing emptiness, becoming an arhat, removing the deluded obscurations, but the appearance is eliminated by cleansing the mind through repeated meditation on emptiness again and again and again, so that you no longer have this veil of the appearance of true existence. So somebody who's an arhat, when they're meditating, okay, when they're in meditative equipoise, they see emptiness and only emptiness. There's no veil, there's no appearance of true existence in their meditation on emptiness. Okay, but once they get off their meditation cushion and they're walking down the street, things still appear to be truly existent. Okay, the arhat doesn't believe in that appearance anymore, but things still appear that way. Becoming a Buddha means eliminating that false appearance, eliminating the appearance of inherent existence. So that when you see phenomena, you're just seeing them as dependently arising. There's no kind of false appearance. Okay? So the false appearance is like when you watch TV, it seems like real people on TV, doesn't it? That's the false appearance. When you believe that they're real people, you know, and you start like really getting incredibly emotionally involved with everything that's going on the TV, that's your grasping at inherent, you know, that's similar to grasping at inherent existence. So just turning the TV on, it looks like real people. Then our mind that says, yeah, that's real people, and you know, I'm really behind this character and I'm really against that character and da-da-da-da-da, that's like the deluded obscurations that, you know, or the grasping at it. So the arhat stops grasping at it, but in post-meditation when he's walking around the street, still having the appearance. You're still seeing the TV screen. You're still seeing all that stuff. Okay? And it's still appearing like real people. Yeah? But the Buddha would see it and see it as a TV screen. Okay, with that appearance and not have the appearance of it as real people. It wouldn't appear to the Buddha as real people. Buddha would just recognize though that's the dance of the electrons on the TV screen. Okay?
So the stain would be actually true?
Well, no, you'd be able to maybe still have the image, but it would appear very different because it would appear to you as just you know, a TV screen with a dance of electrons, okay? Turning the TV off would be like going into your meditation on emptiness when you only perceive emptiness, okay? And the thing also that's a difference between an arhat and a Buddha is that an arhat, when he or she is in meditative equipoise, can't perceive relative phenomena. And when they come out of their meditation on emptiness, they see relative phenomena. They're having this appearance of true existence, and so they can't simultaneously perceive emptiness directly. Okay. Whereas a Buddha, because there's no longer this appearance of true existence, when they're in their meditative, when they're outside their meditation, they can also directly perceive emptiness. Okay. So Buddha has the ability to perceive emptiness and to perceive the relative dependently existent phenomena at the same time. So for Buddha, actually, you can't really speak about when the Buddha's out of their meditative equipoise, because the Buddha's always in meditative equipoise. Okay? Yeah, they're always in meditative equipoise, but their meditative equipoise is special because they can also perceive dependent phenomena at the same time. Whereas before that on the path, once you're focused on emptiness, that's all you see. There's no appearance of other phenomena to that consciousness. Okay? That was a long answer for a short question. Is it okay? Is it understandable? Okay. Anybody else? Yeah. So enlightenment, okay, if somebody ever asks you what is enlightenment, you know, it's a very easy definition. All the things that are to be eliminated have been eliminated. All the things that have been developed have been developed. Okay? So that all the defilements on the mind, both the deluded obscurations, the obscurations to omniscience, have been purified and removed. All the good qualities, okay, the confidence, the responsibility, the wisdom, compassion, patience, all those good qualities, concentration, those have all been developed to the fullest perfection. Yeah. Okay? So in Tibetan, the word for Buddha is Sangye. Sang means to clean or purify. Ge means to develop or evolve. So just in those two syllables, you see the definition of what a Buddha is. Okay? Something to look forward to.